Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. I'm Jeff Lagerman, and we have a few of our compadres that are missing tonight, but I'm here, and senior editor of Jaguars.com, John Osher, is here.
Lost some weight this week.
You did.
Head weight.
You did.
No.
Oh, the other guys. That's a shock. I'll remind them of that when they come back next week. And we've got a special guest sitting in with us for the first half of the show, and he's Jaguars offensive coordinator, Bob Bratkowski. And Bob, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So are your feet finally hitting the ground yet? I know it's kind of been a whirlwind of sorts, I guess, for you and all the other coaches.
It has been. We literally hit the ground with our feet running, and they haven't stopped yet. So there have been a lot of long days and a lot of different things we're working on, and it's exciting, but it's tedious. There's a lot of things we're on to right now.
I would have to think that last week was an exciting week because that, I guess, Monday of last week was really the first day that your staff was in its entirety, with the exception of Ron Prince, who I guess the release came out today. He's the assistant offensive line coach. But John's thoughts that he got from the combine in Mobile, and the thoughts that I've gotten from other friends of mine around the league, is that, boy, what a staff. And certainly Mike had an advantage as the first team to really get a head coach. And, you know, he jumps out and says he gets the kind of the pick of the litter.
He really did. He was able to be ahead of everybody. And he did. He put a very impressive staff together. And we've been meeting on offense now for about 6 or 7 days in the mornings. And it's really a good group. So much experience, so much, you know, guys that have been in the league, experienced different things, been successful, really good teachers. It's really fun to work with these guys.
And you're the offensive coordinator, but this is a unique staff in that you've got a lot of guys who have done that job before. Good thing?
It is a good thing. I think, you know, at the end of the day, I've certainly got to make certain decisions about, you know, the way things are going to be structured. But the input that they can give to the whole staff about issues that they've dealt with, not only in the structure of an offense and how you call things, how you name things, but when you start to get to game planning against various opponents and the ideas that will be available, it should be really, really fun to deal with.
Mike talked last week that it was a group that, you know, was very willing to put their egos at the door. It's not like everybody's trying to be the offensive coordinator. Everybody's trying to put ideas in and get the best out of the offense it can.
That's really where it is. And you know, and my role is to make sure that they keep bringing those ideas mm-hmm. out. I don't want them to feel like this is just my show. Here's how we're doing it. I try to keep them involved, and I always ask for their opinion. Is there a better way to say this, a better way to do this? And that's really beneficial to me, and I think it will be very beneficial to us as a team.
And I would think that you're going to get a lot of ideas. I mean, Greg Olson, the quarterbacks coach, and I guess the title also assistant head coach, quarterbacks coach. Sylvester Kroon's been a head coach, been a coordinator. That's a lot of brain power.
It is. And it's there are a lot of very intelligent, very good football coaches, very good teachers, and it's been a very smooth process up to this point.
And from talking to Mike last week, he said, you know, the great thing about this point, where we're at, he said that, you know, we've got a new staff and everybody's kind of getting their families moved into town. And right now nobody's family's here, so we're really hitting it pretty hard.
Yes, we are. There's there's some long days. Nobody wants to go back and sit in the hotel room, stare at the four walls or watch TV. So we have a tendency to stay up here, you know, well into the evening and then go home, get a little bit of rest, and come back and do it again.
I think it's a process that fascinates fans because most people obviously haven't been in the room like you guys have putting together a playbook. And I get some questions all the time. How does the process work? Is it a matter of putting the play up and somebody saying, hey, this might work better here, this might work better here? Is that the process?
Well, it's a long, tedious process. Mm-hmm. We basically are creating a book that is probably, I would say, 4 inches thick, you know, double-sided pages, and we're still working through the basic information of the book, the mechanics of how the huddle is, how the snap counts are, how we call formations, how we call motions, how we call shifts. And really, we haven't even talked about a football play yet, and we've been doing it for 6 days. And we're working half days because there's a lot of other things going on. We're working football in the morning, but at the same time, we're evaluating the Jaguar talent. We're evaluating the Senior Bowl tapes. We're evaluating the NFL free agents that are out there. And so, you know, we've got a lot of things we're dealing with, and it keeps the day very full.
And Sylvester said last week there was one morning where you guys basically spent several hours on one page of the book. But he said that's the kind of detail that pays off in November.
Yes.
When you've got to have everything now so that the process of putting it in is smooth.
Exactly. I mean, it's the platform you build off of. And you have to make sure as you're doing it that you don't paint yourself in a corner and say, okay, we're going to do it this way. And then all of a sudden, as you move forward, you go, oh, that didn't cover every scenario. Well, we've got to cover all those scenarios. But like you said, we spent almost the whole morning on one page. It was basically what we would call our alert system or audible system along those lines, and just wanted to make sure that it was covering every possible scenario and it was easy to teach and understandable by the players.
And the language is yours. I mean, that's one thing that Mike really emphasized to us last week. He said, look, you know, play caller as an offensive coordinator, it's got to be a language that he understands. So I would think that the language is yours, and you know, no matter what the play is going to be, it's got to be in your language, right?
It has to flow off my tongue, basically. Right. It has to come second nature. I have to be able to call it in a moment's notice and get it called, get it down. But there are some things I still will have to learn because we're doing some things just a touch different than the last time I did them. And, you know, I'll have to learn those things. But by going through it as meticulously as we are right now, it's just another way of me to ingrain it in my mind.
You mentioned that part of the day is evaluating this team. Some of your thoughts on the offensive personnel that you're going to have to be able to work with, and we're talking about guys that wore a Jaguars jersey this past year. And let's start with the quarterback, Blaine Gabbert, because that's the one that everybody seems to want to focus in on. And I watched every play that he did last year, and certainly very impressive at times, and at times not so good, but your overall impressions.
Well, he came in probably in the worst year that a quarterback could come into the NFL. Now, there were others that came in as well. He came out of a shotgun system, hadn't taken three five-step drops. You know, he had no benefit of OTAs, off-season. He showed up to training camp and had to go get it. And that was a very difficult thing. And he really, he's at the point now where he kind of got that first taste of being under center a lot, being exposed to NFL offensive communication styles, being exposed to NFL defenses. But really the first thing we're going to be working with him on is his fundamentals for under center and until the time he gets the ball out of his hand.
I sit there and I marvel at what it must be like for a rookie quarterback. I remember my rookie season in 1989 when Jim Vicarella, who was on the same staff as your dad, who was on that Jet staff, handed me a playbook and said, here you go, son. And I went back and looked at that thing, and it was like looking at a Greek language. And it was extremely difficult to play linebacker in that first year. I can't imagine what it would be like to play quarterback in the NFL in a year in which there was no OTAs, you know, hardly anything with the lockout, and then boom, here we go.
It was it was a very difficult year for a lot of rookies throughout the league, particularly the quarterbacks. They're the ones that have they have the most information they have to process and then manage the rest of the team. You know, some had a little more success than others, but, you know, it was the people around them and, you know, the way things were going, how the guys around them were playing. He's got a lot of work to do, but there's an enormous wealth of talent there.
For the fan who doesn't quite understand it, what makes it so difficult to go from the spread in college to dropping back in the NFL? Why is that tough?
Well, really what it boils down to is if you're in the shotgun the whole time, you're basically taking three-step rhythm drops off of getting the ball in your hands from there. Sometimes just a two-step drop or a one, we call it a one-and-a-half type drop. But now when you have to get your hands under center, and you'd be amazed that the guys that hadn't been under center for their 4 or 5 year college career, just getting a clean snap from the center after not having done it for 4 years is a challenge. That's the first thing, which also now for any other quarterback, that's second nature. It's subconscious. They don't think about it. Well, you've got guys now that are consciously aware of the exchange from the center. And so now a certain amount of mental energy is already being spent that the other guys aren't spending. Then you start talking about the drops and the ability to stay balanced, stay in rhythm, to get yourself in position to make the first throw. Whereas now you see a bunch of them that snaps the issue. Now they're building up, some guys build up way too much speed going back. Then they've got to spend a lot of energy as they plant their back foot and then start to move up. Some guys, you know, sink down as they do it. It's not a natural process. It's if you haven't been doing it, it takes time.
Oh, and he didn't even have 4 years. Well, we're going to take a break here. It's me, Jeff Loggeman, along with John Osher, the .com guy, and the Jaguars offensive coordinator, Bob Brackowski. That's my shot at you.
I like that.
We'll be back right after this.
Continuing coverage.
Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna with Jeff Loggeman and John Osher and Jaguars offensive coordinator Bob Brackowski. And Bob, to kind of wrap up some of the thoughts on the quarterback, this offseason, as head coach Mike Mularkey said to us last Wednesday night, is different than NFL offseasons of past because of the new collective bargaining. And he said, you know, basically he told the equipment manager, you got to put all the balls into a safe and lock it up. How frustrating is that as a coach? In that this is typically, you know, we're getting near that time to where you can start to work with players and help them get better, but you can't.
Yeah, that it is difficult. It's you'd love to get hands on a lot of these guys a lot earlier than we're going to be able to. But the reality of it is we're not going to. So we just hope that as they get ready to go, that we can communicate with them and you know, talk to them. You know, you're not even supposed to talk football with them. So. There's a certain point where you can start to talk football with them. When we get to that point, we will. But it's the nature of the beast right now with the new CBA, and there's nothing we can do about it. And every other team is in the same boat, so it's all going to be equal. But we'd love to get started today.
Some of the other offensive players that you've had a chance to look at, I mean, one person that's it's pretty obvious that he's a talented player, and that's Maurice Jones-Drew. But looking at some of the other positions, the wide receiver group, go there for a minute.
Well, I think that's one group that we've got to get some improvement out of. That's a group, as you look at them, that, you know, I know Jerry Sullivan, who's a heck of a football coach, our receiver coach. He'll work some wonders with some of those guys, and if we do bring in some new talent, whether it's through the draft or free agency, I think we can get that group up to speed to where it will help out our quarterback. The tight end position, I think, is real solid. There's some good depth there. There's some different styles, guys that can be helpful in the pass game and in the run game. I think there's some depth at the offensive line as well. I'm impressed with the offensive line. You can never have too many good offensive linemen. So overall, I was excited when I got a chance to sit down and look at a bunch of them.
The reputation of the offensive line, understandably because of Maurice's success, is that it's a run-blocking unit. From looking at him last year, do you see a group that can pass block well enough? Do you see do you like what you see there? I'm sorry.
Well, I think there's a little room for improvement, but I think they're not certainly a washout in the mm-hmm. pass protection area, and you know, every team's got issues. There was spots at Atlanta last year that there were guys we had to help, and just about every team's going to have that. Very few don't. So part of the structure and part of the way you operate is you get to your guys up to a certain level, and if certain guys need help against a particular style defensive player, you help them with a back chipping or a tight end in front of them or whatever ways you use.
They didn't get any help in Atlanta, Bob. just a thought right there. You've mentioned also that part of your time is obviously evaluating the Senior Bowl, evaluating what is going to be potentially the free agent market because tags are still going to apply until mm-hmm. that date starts. And you're working with Gene Smith and his guys. How has that been for you so far?
Well, we have not spent much time with them yet. Gene has wanted us to spend, you know, do what we're doing, which is spend our mornings on the football aspect and then sit in our rooms over there. He doesn't want us to be influenced by any scout's opinion of a player or a free agent or a drafted guy. He wants us to just, we all sit in our offices, turn the computer on, get the film up on the screen, and make our evaluations, and then as we get closer, that information will be transferred back and forth.
Mercedes Lewis was a guy who had a Pro Bowl season 2010, dropped off a little bit as a receiver last year. Is he a guy that can fit well offensively with what this scheme will become?
Oh, I think so. I think he fits in really nice. This offense is friendly to tight ends, and I think he's capable of doing a lot of things. And when I watched him play, I mean, I know a lot of people base everything on numbers, you know, how many touchdowns, how many receptions. But in some cases, that's not necessarily says a guy has a good or a bad year. If you watch some of the things he did some things extremely well. Numbers don't always tell the story.
He's a tremendous talent, and I don't think there's any questioning his blocking ability. Have you seen, and you come from a team that Tony Gonzalez, I mean, one of the greatest receiving tight ends of all time, and back in his heyday, he was a very willing blocker. Not to the level that Mercedes Lewis is. This was a little bit of a change for you, having a dominant blocking tight end.
It is, but, you know, and I watched him when he came out. I remember I was at his workout in college when he came out because we were looking very strongly at him. And he reminds me a little bit of somewhat of the Jermaine Gresham that we had in Cincinnati my last year. You know, he's kind of built the same, kind of the same style of guy. Having the blocking tight end and then have him be able to be as effective as he is in the pass game, I think is a real benefit because you don't find many guys that are at that level, you know. I mean, there's guys that are really, really good pass catchers and there's guys that are really, really good run blockers, but he's got enough of both to get you really excited.
Well, people look at this offense and they see the 32nd ranking last year and they automatically assume, boy, you've got a ton of work to do, which you obviously do. But how important is it, you know, you come in with that one thing you know you can count on, this team can run. As you start to build this, to have that as a building block, how important is that?
Well, it's very important. And I'll tell you this, I've always believed this, that a good running game is always a quarterback's best friend. When a quarterback is able to hand it off 25 times in a game, 30 times in a game, and it's efficient, then what it does is it allows him those times to pick and choose and throw against really good looks. And it doesn't make him have to make a play every play. You know, a quarterback has the ball in his hands every play. You like him to be able to take a little stress off him and just hand it off. And then and they like that. And even the best ones like that. When you have a good running game. So when you have that as a basis, it's going to make everything else a lot easier to improve quicker.
Has there been a time in, you know, this first 10, 12 days of the process where you've seen something in the afternoon when you're looking at a guy where you go, well, we can put this in for that guy, or we can use this guy in a different way than maybe I was thinking? Have you learned as you're going along maybe something that somebody can do that you didn't expect?
Oh, I've seen some things, you know, that, for instance, plays that we didn't run, you know, a certain style of play that I really like to run.
Right.
But yet maybe in other places haven't had that style of runner to run it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then I saw that with Maurice, and it was like, oh, man, he's going to be really good at this kind of run. We can get back and emphasize this run.
The guy that comes to my mind when John brought that question up is fullback Greg Jones, one of the best blocking fullbacks in the National Football League, and he's got good hands.
Mm-hmm.
Could his role change a little bit, be increased somewhat, or is Greg a blocking fullback in that alone?
No, you can do some things with him. There's no doubt there. And, you know, and again, we haven't looked at every game and every snap from the entire year yet. But we're getting closer to it. But I think, you know, that a good fullback, especially as physical as he is, you know, you can all of a sudden you can sneak him up through somewhere and pop the ball to him and get him in open spaces, and you can generate some plays that they weren't quite expecting.
Yeah, because that's the first thing that pops in my mind. I mean, Greg Jones, when he was at Florida State, a tailback, when he first came here, he actually carried the ball quite a bit. And then for the last couple of years, you know, Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew, who are we going to give the ball to? We're not going to give it to Greg Jones. But, I mean, he's still capable of touching the ball and making plays. Because, you know, in the Super Bowl, I'm sitting there watching the Super Bowl, and that fullback, what's his name for the New York Giants? He catches the one ball and runs over the guy in the flat, and it's a big play in the ball game.
You know,
I'd love to see Greg kind of be able to make plays like that.
It's always been a little bit of my philosophy that, you know, you when you get guys that go in there, like, for instance, a fullback that goes in there and just pounding all day, you need to, you kind of need to throw them a little sugar by giving, let them have those chances, you know. Give them their chance to make a play out in space. Give them their chance to feel like they've contributed in more than just one way. And that seems to bring them along and invest in it even more. So I think those are important things, and we'll try to do that with all of our guys.
Last question here before we let you go. How big of an influence has your dad, Zeke Bratkowski, been on you with your football mind?
Well, quite a bit. I mean, I from the time I was a little boy, I can remember I used to sit in the basement with he and Bart Starr, and they would have the projector down there, and they'd be studying. I think it was Thursday nights they would get together, and I'd sit down there, and I think they'd have a little popcorn and be watching the film and talking, and I'd just sit down there as a little boy, watch and listen. And so I kind of grew from an early age of being around football, being in NFL training camps. So yeah, I learned a lot from watching my dad. I learned really quite a bit on how to be a teacher from watching my dad. I always thought that he was a great teacher, and the way he used the language to get his point across, and I've tried to emulate it as much as I can of that, and it's been a big influence.
Well, Bob, thanks for spending the time with us tonight.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Folks, Jaguars offensive coordinator Bob Bratkowski, and we'll be back right after this with more of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Jeff Logman here along with Jaguars.com senior editor John Osher. And a quick note here, Luke Ackerstrom. A lot of people probably remember the story throughout the year in his relationship with Brad Meester and a number of other players. Well, when First Baptist Academy's first graders were asked to make wishes for 2012, six-year-old Luke Ackerstrom said, "I want to play football. Westside Baptist Church's Flag Football League and an entire community will make Luke's dream come true." Luke suffered a seizure on December 31st, 2010, and was diagnosed with a rare case of encephalitis. Luke began to start moving his legs on June 21st for the first time since the seizures, and goes through an aggressive rehab schedule 4 days a week. This Saturday, at 4 p.m., Luke will play football. Prior to the game at 3:15 p.m., Jaguars players and the Roar will be signing autographs, and there will be police cars, a SWAT team, fire truck, and a police helicopter for kids to see. That's this Saturday at Trinity Baptist Church, 800 Hammond Boulevard. And prior to the game, remember, at 3:15, the Jaguars players, the Roars, autographs, the police cars, the fire trucks, the whole nine yards. And that's a cool deal, and
fantastic,
I'm excited
deal
for him.
Yeah, fantastic deal.
So your thoughts on the big game this past weekend?
Carolina Duke play tonight.
No. The Super Bowl. First of all, congratulations to Tom Coughlin.
I was able to communicate a little bit with Brian Coughlin this week, his son who works here in town. You know, and I don't root very often anymore. If the Jaguars are playing, you obviously have rooting interest. But I was really pulling for the Giants to win that game.
Absolutely.
You know, for Tom. And I didn't expect to see him hug Flava Flav after the game.
I heard that was worth the
price of admission as well. But good for him. You talk about a guy who perseveres and who has been through it. And I was just glad to see him win it. I really was.
You know, no matter how many Super Bowls that he wins somewhere else, he's always going to be a part of the Jaguars family.
No question. And I think that becomes more true as time goes on for some reason. Yeah. And, you know, those of us, you played, I covered the team, who were here when he was here, if you weren't, it's hard to express to people how much he dominated the building and dominated the – and how much he shaped the early years. And it's hard to imagine now that he's been gone that long, because he was such an overwhelming presence and such a big reason for this, you know, success they had. He's a part of this place.
Yeah, I got something. We may have discussed this before. I don't remember, but does Tom go in the Ring of Honor here?
I think eventually he will.
I don't know.
Sure,
it's an interesting question. I don't think so.
Nah, I think he will.
I mean, first coach.
No, I know. I know. But you know, his glory. I mean, if his career ended tomorrow, obviously that's not going to happen.
Right.
He's a coach, and he's going to coach until he can't coach anymore. But his fame is now made on two Super Bowl victories with the New York Giants.
If it was set up like baseball, and Tom goes into the Hall of Fame, he goes in as a Giant.
Oh, sure, sure.
Well, he goes in as a coach. You know, when guys go into the Hall of Fame, they don't go in with coaches don't go in with a uniform.
Right. Players don't either. I mean,
right.
If you looked at it
that way, he's
well, sure he's more so. Yeah, obviously.
But right. Either way, it's still. It's heartwarming. I think a lot of people in Jacksonville were rooting for him because he does have strong roots in this town. He's still very active in the community. He still has charity events that happen in this town that benefit this town.
He'll always
people in this town were rooting for him.
Yeah, and he'll always be associated with this franchise. When you're the first coach, the GM, the guy who really set the tone for, it was 7 or 8 years. You know, he'll always be associated with the franchise, and should be, in a positive way.
What impressions did you come away from the game with? Because my impressions is that there are no and this impression, I think, is something that, you know, we've all learned over the last number of years, but this year just, I mean, reinforces that thought, and that there are no teams without holes anymore.
No.
Every team has a weakness. The Patriots, their defense, their running game.
Sure.
You know, and it's no longer that a team has a one weakness, it might be multiple.
Many. Right. And that's why the quarterback, I think, has become so important, because every team has weaknesses, but if you've got that guy who can bail you out, somehow in the fourth quarter of that game, when the Giants had the ball, you just had this feeling that if a play had to be made, Eli was going to make the throw, and those guys were going to catch the ball.
And what a magnificent
over and over again.
Catch.
A magnificent catch, but a perfect throw.
Perfect
as well.
Throw.
I mean,
no doubt.
And I can remember it was one of the primetime games the Giants played, and I was sitting there watching it. And I don't always get a chance to watch other teams play because you're covering the Jaguars on the weekend. I remember sitting there in the second half of this game and thinking, you know, somewhere online, Eli got really good, and this was in November, mm-hmm. and he had been good before. But I was watching the game, and everything he threw was perfect.
He'd been a middle-of-the-road quarterback prior to this past year.
Good decision. I mean, perfect decisions. And I remember tweeting that out. I said, I'm not sure when this happened, but all of a sudden he's good. And every time you watch him, that's, you know, I know it's a basic thing to say, but, you know, the decision-making, the guts, he has become that quarterback that you won in the fourth quarter.
You just find a way to clone Manningham and Cruz and see if we can get them in teal. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Lee wants to get in from Ponte Vedra. Good evening, Lee.
Gentlemen, am I still on?
You're
good evening,
on.
Gentlemen.
Good evening.
All right. First of all, just your comments about Coach Coughlin, you know, the J Fund, et cetera. I was rooting for him.
Absolutely.
I could give you some personal stories about how he supported our children in school, et cetera. My question is this. A 4-inch double-sided playbook for the offense.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, that's overwhelming. Does it get too complicated? I remember comments by Mel Tucker saying to his defense, we're going to streamline this so you can play fast. Anyway, I'll take it off the air.
Okay, Lee.
That just seems overwhelming.
All right, thank you, Lee. You know, I think you got to remember one thing. When an offensive coach is talking about a 4-inch playbook, that doesn't mean that on game day
right.
that 4-inch playbook is going to be used in its entirety. I mean, it gets trimmed down.
Right. It might be that they might not even get the whole thing put in.
You know, and I was going to ask this question of Bob Bratkowski, the Jaguars offense coordinator, who we had on the first half of the show. If you're joining us late, you can go to Jaguars.com and listen to the show later in the week. But I was going to ask him, do you make a playbook irregardless of the personnel that you have? Because obviously you have plays that are designed for if you have a Mercedes Lewis. Well, what if you don't? And what if you got a Victor Cruz and a Larry Fitzgerald and a jam-up receiving tight end? So, Lee, I think that that playbook encompasses having all of those type of players.
And from what he said, right now they haven't even gotten to putting the plays in yet. They're still in the process of putting the basics in, and I'm sure once they start acquiring personnel, then all of a sudden things become more fluid. You fit what you're doing. You fit who you've got.
Well, that's. Can you imagine what my thought was in 1989 when I got mine? Wasn't 4.5 inches or 4 inches thick. It was like 3.
Right.
And it was handed to me and said, "Here, son, learn it."
Yeah.
Anyway, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. When you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Steinmart. 6 Jacksonville location Steinmart. More fashion, less price. Back on Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna with Jeff Loggeman and John Osher. Baselli and Sexton are off this week, and so we have a very high-quality show with the two of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on.
Your impressions from the season overall, because my thought is that this year the NFL did something scheduling-wise that it was forced to do, really, because of the lockout and the unknown of whether there would be a delay in the season. And that it was early, it was heavy with division games, and then late, it went to division games. Do you remember, and I remember one, but I mean, they only really had the Green Bay Packers at the end of the season that weren't vying for something in the last two games, whereas everybody else in the league, because you had those division games at the end, were all playing for something, and they played their guys.
Yeah, I'd like to see a couple of years to see if this was sort of a fluky with the way the standings fell or if it was because the division games. I still think you're going to most years have two or three teams at the end not playing. But even that said, you've got a higher percentage chance of having meaningful games at the end
with
of the season.
With division games.
If you've got division games. And I'm a little surprised that it's taken this long to go that route. I mean, I don't know that. It's all positive and no negative. To me, you know, you have the division games at the end of the season, and you get a much higher percentage chance of a team being able to play its way back into things. And you saw it with the Giants.
Well, you had us Christmas Day, or the day before, after when we played 24th, I guess.
We played Christmas Eve
against Tennessee. So you got Jacksonville, Tennessee. I mean,
right, absolutely. I mean, I don't see any negative toward keeping it like that. The thing I noticed about the season most of all, though, was there was a lot of teeth gnashing during the lockout. Is the quality of play going to go down? Are we going to see a lot of – and there was – I mean, if you didn't know there was a lockout
– you wouldn't know.
You would not have known there was a lockout.
And I said that during the lockout, you'll see. And I think to the untrained eye, and I felt this with all of my heart, that people would not be able to tell the difference.
Right, and you couldn't. It was a great season.
With the trained eye, I think if people were to break down the tape and the complexities of certain things, it might have been simplified somewhat.
It hurt certain things. I certainly think it hurt this team because you played Gabbert early and he did not have the off season. In situations like that, it certainly hurt. But as you said, to the untrained eye, I don't think you would want that every year. But I did not think it hurt play at all this year in terms of the quality of play, the enjoyment for the fan. I don't think there was any negative effect.
A wildly successful year in the NFL.
Oh, well, they got the labor thing solved.
I mean,
you
got labor solved
for 10 years,
a decade,
right?
And then to turn around and have what I think was one of the most entertaining seasons in recent memory.
Sure.
and have an entertaining Super Bowl. And holy cow.
Between two teams that the league likes having there. I mean, those are good draws. You know, you're never going to have a bad rating anyway. But those are two glamour teams, Manning, Brady. I mean, that was – they couldn't have asked
Belichick,
for anything more.
Belichick, Coughlin. I mean, you got you know, marquee coaches. You got marquee quarterbacks.
Right.
And that's what this league is about. I mean, that's one thing, though, that I learned is that, you know, you look at all the teams that were in the playoffs, you know, with the exception of Alex Smith. I mean, you've got to have the quarterback play at a – and I won't say super high level because Alex Smith didn't play at a super high level, but that's what you got to have to get to have a chance.
But that's still the rarity, and, it, you know, it. If you look at the last 9, 10, 11 Super Bowl winners, I think it's 9, big-time Hall of Fame potential quarterback at the helm, and that's, you know, I think that more than anything, I got a lot of questions this week about why do you think it is the, you know, why the team with the home field advantage does not have the edge that it did 10, 15 years ago. It used to be when we were growing up, Jeff, following football, if you had home field, it
you
wasn't
a
guarantee, but,
no, but
it was very difficult
to
get a Super Bowl without home field. That has completely changed. It's hard, you know, it's still better to have it, but it is in no way something that has to keep you out of the Super Bowl. And I think it's because the quarterback position and it is such that, you know, you can overcome an awful lot when you get the hot guy and you get the offense going.
Well, I was thoroughly entertained. And what impressed me the most about this past weekend with the Super Bowl was that the Super Bowl has so much going on. I mean, before the game, you got Blake Shelton and Miranda Lambert doing the thing. Then you got the national anthem. And so you got two things that kind of delayed. So I'm thinking from a player standpoint, you know, this is not normal.
Right.
You know, and then you have the extended halftime, which usually is, what, 15 minutes, and then it becomes 30 for the Super Bowl. And I thought that both teams really handled the adrenaline and the change of a game schedule as good as you could possibly ask for. And a lot of times you just don't see that in the Super Bowl.
And the game has gotten, you know, it's funny. When we were growing up, and we're about the same age, and we were both big football
fans.
I'm
younger than you.
Well, pretty
way
close.
Younger.
Pretty close.
Than you.
But, you know, the Super Bowl stunk most years.
Yeah.
It was bad. And it started getting a little better in the 80s. The 90s was okay. And you're hard-pressed to think of a bad Super Bowl lately. And maybe the Ravens and the Giants back in 2000 was maybe the last one that, boy, you just knew at halftime the thing was over. I think that was even close at the half. And the quality of play has gone up. And even with the lockout, I can remember March, April, getting all kinds of emails. I'm not coming back to this game. I'm done with it. You know, it's as popular as ever. It's as good as it. And it has really continued to become the big elephant in sports.
Want this team to be there. That's when I'm – the whole week I'm sitting there going – what's it going to be like when this team is there?
It's an unbelievable thing to be a part of. And I covered two of them when I was with Indy, and it's the event and the – you know, and you caught a little bit of it in 96 when the Jaguars got hot. There is nothing like being around a team in a city with a playoff run.
No. It's all right, my last comment departing here, a lot of people debated what the Giants should have done there at the end of the game. When the running back kind of fell back into the end zone, should have taken any. No way!
Nah, they tried to do that.
You take the touchdown, you're down by points, you got to take the lead.
Tom wanted the knee.